end of Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, final chapter of the book of Ephesians. Paul deals with just a few things in this chapter. I want to just look at a couple of things. First of all, he deals with children and their parents. That's a pretty important relationship because just about every one of us is either a child or a parent. Now, they have, you know, their parents may have died. Some may never have had children. But at some point, we all were in one of those relationships one way or another, even if it may not have been the physical parent. It may have been a grandmother or an aunt or some other guardian of some kind. But we all had that kind of relationship to somebody, probably, in our lives. So notice what he says. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Some people have said this means that if your parents aren't Christians, you don't have to obey them. But that's not what he means at all. What he means, though, is as long as what they're telling you to do is not violating the command of God, you obey that. You do what they tell you to do. There are cases, of course, where some parents who are criminal try to involve their children in those criminal activities. Try to do sinful things and involve those children in those sinful things. And the child doesn't need to be involved in those things. And it's a sad case when parents who ought to be teaching children the right things to do are instead teaching them the wrong things to do. There was a case, I know we saw, I think, in a Walmart parking lot on the security camera, the woman was hitting her child. And as the story unfolded, there was some indication that the reason she was hitting her child was because she was trying to get that child to steal something for her out of the store, and the child didn't do it right, or I don't know, did he do a wrong thing right? Anyway, the child didn't cooperate, didn't do what the parent wanted her to, and that's why she was hitting that child, because the child wouldn't help her in committing that crime in some way. What a sad situation when parents are involved in doing that. Verse 4, along with this, he tells the parents, the fathers in particular, but mothers too could learn this lesson. He says, "And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." And so he hits both sides of the coin. Children, obey your parents and honor your father and mother, he says in verse 2. And then fathers, don't provoke your children. Then he switches gears, but still dealing with relationships. In verses 5 through 9, he talks about slaves and masters. We today, in our country at least, there is still slavery in the world, but in our country we don't have slavery. But we all still fall into this kind of a relationship in one way or another. This is really very similar to the employee and employer type of a relationship as well. When someone, you have a job to do. How are you going to do that job? You've hired somebody to do a job. How are you going to treat that person that you've hired to do the job? All of us, whereas in their time, you were either a slave or a master, most likely, and you didn't get a chance to be both. But the way our society is set up, we get to be on both sides of this. We sometimes have someone else working for us, and we sometimes work for someone else. And so we have to think about both sides of this. In verse 5, he tells the servants what to do. Those, when you're working for somebody else, how do you act? Well, he says, be obedient to them. When your boss tells you to do something, do it. When you're working for somebody and they tell you to do something, do it. Be obedient. Of course, again, we know that the law of God is never to be violated in this. But he says, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. He says, when we're working for somebody, we need to work for that person or those people just as though we were working for Christ. How would we treat Christ if we were working for Him? Would we be belligerent, rebellious, and try to get there late, leave early, and still want the same pay? How would we behave? Would we do a half-hearted job? Well, many would. And that's the way many people work. But He said, we need to be working as though we're working for Christ. We've got a job to do. Do that job. Be obedient to your boss. And do the job as though you're working for Christ. Then he tells the bosses the same, and you masters, do the same things unto them for bearing threats. In other words, don't be threatening your employees all the time, as some people do, knowing that your master also is in heaven. Neither is their respective persons with him. So he says, if you are a boss, remember you've got a boss too. And with your boss, he's not going to care who you are. It doesn't matter if you're the fellow that empties the garbage cans and sweeps up the floor, or the fellow that runs the company, the president of the company. It doesn't matter to him. You still have to answer to him. He's not going to take any, oh, well, you were the president of a big Fortune 500 company, so I'm going to go easy on you. No, God's not going to do it that way. And he's not going to treat someone worse just because their job was considered more lowly than others. He's not a respecter of persons of that sort. But the way he does respect persons is he respects those people who are obedient to him, who do his will. And so when we find ourselves in these positions, whether we're working for somebody, we work for them like we're working for Christ. If we have somebody working for us, and we do, we often have somebody working for us. When we go to a restaurant, and we sit down and there's a waitress or a waiter that comes and serves us. See, there's a reason we call that serving someone. How do we treat that person? Are we rude? Are we demanding, expecting them to do the impossible? Or are we compassionate, understanding that they've been on their feet for 8 hours serving people, and it's come toward the end of their shift and it's been a long day? How do we treat those individuals? Remember, of course, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If I was that person, how would I want to be treated? We, all of us, have been treated rudely by someone who was in a position of authority over us, who was our boss of sorts. Whether it was a parent figure, whether it was a teacher in school, or whether it was a boss on a job, we've all been treated cruelly and rudely. And we know that didn't feel good. Now, why would we turn around and treat somebody that was serving us or working for us in that way? Well, we wouldn't, or we shouldn't, at any rate. And so he deals with both sides of the coin. Either side, you have a responsibility to act as Christ would act. How would Christ behave in this situation? Would he grumble and complain and gripe? Would he demand and threaten and be cruel to those who were under his authority? No, he certainly wouldn't. He would be kind and caring, just as he is with us. And then, finally, we see verses 10 and following. Not a very big finally, just a few verses there. Finally, in verse 10, he tells us in verse 11, put on the whole armor of God to be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And then in verse 13 through 18, he's going to explain that armor. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, verse 14 says, having your loins, that's about around your waist and hip area, have that girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith. We've got some good armor here. We've got a breastplate to protect our chest. Got a helmet to protect our head. Verse 17, take the helmet of salvation. We've got a helmet, we've got a shield to block, we've got protection around our legs and waist area. And we've got our boots or our shoes on. Like the Roman soldiers used to wear boots that come up to their knees, and then they wore around their waist, they'd have they wore those skirts, but they had something to protect them there, to protect from the swords, to protect from the arrows, to protect themselves. And Paul brings this forward to the spiritual realm as well. It's not a physical armor that we put on, it's a spiritual armor that we put on. So we've got our loins protected, we've got our breast protected, our chest, our body, we've got our feet protected, and we're ready to move. To avoid Satan's arrows, if need be. We've got the shield to be able to quench the fiery darts of the wicked. We've got a helmet of salvation to protect our head, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. We've got the Word of God as a sword. And notice of all of those, the sword is the only one that's an offensive weapon. But it can also be a defensive weapon as well. And that's the way we use that word, both to defend and to go on the offensive as well. And so we have that. But if you notice, there's no protection for the back. The whole back side of us would be left open. Well, why is that? Because when you go into battle, you go into battle forward. You don't go into battle backward, do you? And it teaches us one thing. We're never, ever, no matter what, to turn our back on the devil. You turn your back on the devil, you're in trouble. You don't turn your back to the devil. But what's more, God has promised, and promised the children of Israel when they were fleeing out of the land of Egypt, He was behind them, being their rear guard, wasn't He? And He protects us. He makes sure that nobody can sneak up on us from behind if we're watching and we're ready. He'll protect the backside. So we need to be prepared for that. And then verse 18, one more key ingredient. Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. We sing a song about watch and pray. Watch and pray. And that's what Paul tells us here. Watch and pray. Praying always and watching. Those two things are so very important. And those are the areas where many times we fail. Of course, there are often times where we don't have the truth. Notice the defense, the armor that we have, they're all things that are useful in the Christian life. They're all things that we sometimes don't have in our lives. He says the truth. Sometimes we lie. When we lie, we don't have any defense from Satan because we're lying. We're involved in sin. And then he says the breastplate of righteousness. Not sinfulness, but righteousness. We've got to be righteous to defend ourselves against Satan. We can't go out there and live in the world like the world is and then think that God's going to protect us from everything. No, it doesn't work that way. You get out there and play with fire, you get burned, just like everybody else. God's not going to protect you if you're out there living a sinful life. You've got to be righteous. And then he talks about the gospel, the preparation of the gospel of peace. A lot of times, we don't even give the gospel a second thought when we go out from day to day. But the word of God, the gospel of peace, needs to be in the front of our thoughts each and every day. We talked about these relationships, the children and parents, the servant and master. But in every relationship that we go throughout the day, our first thought should be, what about Christ? How would Christ work to bring the gospel to this person? How can I work to bring the gospel to this person? And the gospel needs to be in the front of our thoughts at all times. And then he talks about that shield of faith. We talked about faith this morning. It's impossible to please him without that faith. That's why faith is a shield. The shield is the thing that protects everywhere. Wherever you move that shield, it'll protect that area. Faith, how important that is. And the helmet of salvation. Salvation. Oh, what a protection that is, salvation. But there are many, of course, who don't have salvation, and yet they go throughout life expecting that they're going to go to heaven with God, expecting that the devil can't harm them, expecting that they'll just be fine the way they are, and yet they can't because they don't have the salvation that Paul talks about here. And of course the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. And how many of us, I don't mean that we necessarily carry our Bibles everywhere that we go, but how many of us have the Word hidden in our heart? And David said, I've hidden my Word in my heart that I may not sin against thee. How many of us have that Word in our heart? Colossians, Paul writes to the Colossian church and tells them, let the Word of Christ dwell in you richly. But how many of us do that? When somebody has something and they say, well, what do you think about such and such? Do we tell them what we saw on Oprah or what we saw on CNN, or do we tell them what God said about it? What's in our mind? what's the first thing that comes to our mind? Do we tell them what we've heard from neighbors, what gossip we heard, or do we tell them how Paul said to handle a situation like that in one of the letters to the church? You see, the Word of God is completely useless to us if we don't have it, if we don't know how to use it. Do you remember when David went out to fight against Goliath? Before he went out, he went to Saul, and Saul gave him his armor, and gave him his sword, and everything. And they gave him all that armor, and said, hey, here you go, go fight, go. And what did David say? I haven't proved this. In other words, I don't know how to use this armor. It's not going to do me any good. And he wound up having to go out with the armor he knew how to use, which was a slingshot and a rock. Well, he was successful with that. But we have to be careful to learn how to use this armor. We've got to be able to use it in order for it to be successful in defending us. We've got to be able to use that sword. A sword that somebody has that they don't know how to use, it can be a very dangerous thing, not only to somebody else, but to themselves. They wind up cutting themselves with it. Just like any weapon. If you don't know how to use it, it's a dangerous thing for you, just as much as for the enemy. But if you know how to use that weapon, it's very safe for you, but very dangerous for the enemy. And that's the goal with the Word of God. If we know how to use the Word of God as Jesus did, then when Satan comes to tempt us, we'll be able to defend ourselves when he throws something at us, and then turn it around and go on the offensive and attack him with the Word of God as well. But we've got to know how to use it in order to do that. So we've seen tonight that we have certain responsibilities in our relationships in life. Certain ways that we need to behave toward others around. And we've also seen the importance of being armed against Satan. Because I guarantee you, Satan has weapons. And he's got armor. He's not going to come into the battle unprepared. And yet, how many times do we wander out there into the field of battle completely unprepared? In fact, many times oblivious to the fact that we're even on the battlefield. We're just wandering down the street, going in the store, not even thinking about the fact that we're in the middle of a battle here. And Satan is, if not in the midst of attack, planning one and preparing one, and we better be ready for it. Because we don't know when he's going to strike or where. It could be at home, it could be in the car, it could be at the grocery store, it could be at work, it could be anywhere. We need to be ready for it. That's why we have to pray. And watch. We need to watch for Satan's attack. See them coming before they get there. You know a certain person always is trying to cause you problems. You see that person coming, get prepared. Start praying. You see that person coming, you know. You better start praying because that person is one of Satan's weapons against you. Prepare yourself. Watch. See them coming. Pray, prepare, and then use the tools that God has given you, the weapons and the armor that he's given you to defend yourself against that. Do it properly. Do it with the spirit of love and in the way that Christ would have you handle that situation. If you're here tonight, you have a need to respond to the invitation, perhaps because you've treated other people in a way that you shouldn't, whether it be at work or when someone else was working for you, whether it be a parent-child relationship, whatever it might be, any kind of relationship, there are rules that we should follow. There are things that we should do. Or perhaps you have not been living your life protected by the armor of God and you want to determine to yourself that you're going to do a better job of protecting yourself from things. If you're here tonight, you have a need to respond to the invitation. We ask that you do so as we stand.